This week on The Word of the Lord Endures Forever, we'll continue feasting our way through 1 Corinthians with examples for us. Flee idolatry, participants in the altar, to the glory of God, and headship. Join me, Pastor Will Wheaton, for The Word of the Lord Endures Forever, your daily 15-minute, verse-by-verse Bible study on demand. Listen at thewordendures.org or your favorite podcast provider.
We know that the pandemic lockdowns have made a lot of things that were already bad much worse. And one of those things, tragically, horrifically, is the online grooming and exploitation, sexual exploitation of children. How bad was it and how much worse has COVID made it? And what should parents know, not to be naive here, what should they know and know for sure about their kids' online activity? Welcome back to Issues Etc. We're going to talk about children and online sexual exploitation. Daniel Weiss joins us. He's a lifelong Lutheran, executive director of the Sexual Integrity Leadership Summit, and co-author of the new book, Treading Boldly Through a Pornographic World, A Field Guide for Parents. Daniel, welcome to Issues Etc.
Well, thank you, Todd. It's great to be on the show.
What do we know about online sexual exploitation of children during COVID shutdowns?
Well, according to the vice president of the National Center on Missing and Exploited Children, this is the group that tracks these things, there was a 98% increase in reports of online sexual exploitation of kids in 2020. So as that person, John Sheehan, mentioned, there's more, you know, with the kids staying at home in lockdown and not being in school and being on their computers all day, there were just many more opportunities for predators to take advantage of kids who were online all day.
How did the lockdowns, how did they make matters worse than what's already an enormous problem?
Yeah, it is. It isn't a new problem. And we've known this for years that with digital access to pornography, more and more kids are getting exposed. It's happening at younger and younger ages. But I think just that a couple of factors really played into this. You know, the kids being home, many times not having a parent at home with them, and them being expected to kind of self-regulate and go to school online. But the other thing is they were incredibly lonely during this time. They didn't have their normal peer support. They didn't have normal activities that they may like to go out and enjoy, play sports, you know, older teens that can get out and see their friends. And so people are looking for connection. Our kids are looking for connection. And unfortunately, all they had available to them was connecting online. And so anytime you go online, there's a pretty much any technology that's been invented has been exploited by pornography, and that's really been the case over the lockdowns.
Who are the most frequent users of online porn?
Well, research going back to the 80s suggests that kids are the most frequent users of pornography. Bonner Research Group did a report in 2016 called the Porn Phenomenon, and they found that 37% of teens sought out porn monthly, at least monthly. Now, that was ages 13 to 17. The use is higher for 18 to 24. 57% of those young adults said they had sought out porn at least monthly. And then the number for adults 25 and older is 29%. So it's really a problem that starts in the teen years and spikes in the young adult years, and thankfully tapers a bit as people get more into their adulthood.
Talk about the harms inflicted by porn on young people and children.
Well, there's a lot of research on this, and it's not something you can distill in a brief amount of time, but to do my best here, basically what we know about the brain is something called neuroplasticity. And basically, it's if your synapses are firing, those that fire together wire together. What that means is the brain synapses that are being used most frequently tend to create stronger connections. And what happens is if kids are looking at pornography and locking in these images, especially with adrenaline that may come from the excitement and the brain chemicals that are released, is they're basically rewiring their brains based on what they're seeing in pornography. And this really plays out in many very negative circumstances, according to the research. It impacts their ability to form family later. They found that kids that look at pornography are less interested in marriage, less interested in having children and a family. They're less interested in monogamy and faithfulness within a relationship. They're more likely to pursue bizarre or uncommon sexual practices. And it just goes on and on. And so what's happening is, you know, a normal adult or an adult brain can somewhat understand and filter out harmful messages, a fully formed brain. But a kid's brain doesn't have that ability yet. And so instead of, you know, having filters to understand and process what kind of sexual content or imagery they're seeing, this content and imagery becomes kind of a template that becomes the filter and becomes the framework for which they see other things. And so especially early exposure to pornography can be very damaging to a kid's mind and the way their sexual template is developed. And again, I could go on and on, but, you know, not every kid that looks at pornography is going to become addicted. You know, we don't know how all the causes of addiction, but we do know that does change the brain every time we look at pornography.
You say that pornography is being mainstreamed. What do you mean by that?
Well, if you think about, I mean, for older Americans, it used to be difficult to find pornography. You had to go out and look for it. You had to go to the bad part of town way back when, or you had to go to the video store and go in that dark back room and risk running into someone in the community when you were checking out. Or you had to have a magazine delivered to your doorstep and the mailman would know. With the internet, it's completely anonymous. It's affordable, meaning it's basically free, and it's accessible. Like, we have almost no barriers on the internet. And this is what the late Dr. Al Cooper called the triple A effect of internet addiction: accessibility, anonymity, and affordability. But now, I mean, we've seen basically since the early 90s and then moving forward, pornography has been basically accepted into mainstream culture. We have movies that feature porn stars. We have movies that feature the themes and attitudes of pornography. And, you know, this is often appearing in teen movies. Pop stars, musicians, many glorify pornography. It's kind of treated as no big deal in our society. Yet, you know, behind that is a great deal of sexual violence, exploitation, misogyny, racism. I mean, the messages of pornography are really antithetical to what we're trying to be as a culture. And yet it gets a free pass. It gets a free pass from law enforcement and from our cultural gatekeepers. So I think pornography has had a free reign in our society for a long time.
How does it fit within the context of the general sexualization of children?
It's a huge part of it. In fact, many child experts have written about this for years, that adult predators, we use pornography to break down the inhibitions of kids. Well, what happens if society is doing that work for them by, you know, easy access to late-night cable porn or computer porn on their laptops or their phones or their tablets? And so kids are being radically desensitized to these very harmful messages. They're basically becoming normalized. What's actually a very destructive presentation of sexuality and relationships. And so it's not just that kids are being preyed on specifically by predators, but they are being desensitized to the messages of abuse. And this plays out in teen relationships where, you know, many, many articles have been written about how young girls are, you know, I'm talking about teenage girls, are acting out sexually with their boyfriends and basically being asked to recreate what their boyfriends, their teen boyfriends, have seen in pornography. So it's a different form of degradation. They're simply the fill-in for pornography. I mean, you know, pornography is now taking the place of real relationships. But when real relationships come online like this, pornography is still drastically influencing young people's behaviors.
You say that online exploitation and grooming of children, these are underreported. How so?
Well, according to, you know, research that the Department of Justice and the National Center on Missing and Exploited Kids and others have done, I mean, when kids have encountered online content like pornography or obscenity, really hardcore porn, things like that, they often don't tell anyone. In fact, I think one study I saw said 54% of the kids didn't tell a single person, not even their peers, not even their friends. So what we have is, you know, this 98% increase of reports that happened last year is probably a vast underreporting of what actually happened, because the kids many times don't even tell their parents. They either just click out of something, or they tell the predator to go away, or, you know, this is what the research says. So we're probably nowhere near the full story of how much kids are being influenced by pornography and exploitation online today.
So are parents naive about their children's online activity?
I don't know if I'd use that word. I don't think they're fully aware of the challenge of growing up in this culture. I grew up in the, you know, in the 80s, and these challenges weren't present. And so it's hard to identify with what the digital revolution has done to childhood. And so I think parents are kind of wishful in their thinking. And many parents believe, well, my kid would never look at that. And what I always say is, that's the wrong question. The question is, are pornographers going to respect the boundaries and values you have for your family? And the truth is, and the research shows, they don't. They're going to target and solicit young people. And so you cannot ask that question, you know, would my kid look at this? Research shows most kids, and I'm talking upwards of 90% of kids, will have seen pornography before they reach the age of 18. And so this isn't really a question of, is my kid that kind of kid? It's, is my kid is growing up in this kind of culture, and I need to be a little more proactive and intentional in engaging them on these issues.
Daniel Weiss is our guest. We're talking about children and online sexual exploitation. On the other side, how does he account for the disconnect between children's actual online activity and what their parents think they're doing online? You can meet and hear Mark and Molly Hemingway, Robert George, Brian Wolfmiller, Jack Phillips, Larry Rast, and Will Wheaton at the 2021 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference. Making the Case is Friday, July 23rd and Saturday, July 24th at Concordia University, Chicago. Registration is $150. Learn more at issuesetc.org or call 618-223-8385. Making the Case, July 23rd and 24th in Chicago.
Deaconesses are women trained to share the gospel of Jesus Christ through works of mercy, spiritual care, and teaching of the Christian faith. The word deaconess means servant. Find out more on how you can serve in the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod through the vocation of deaconess at lcms.org/deaconess. Working in faith, laboring in love, remaining steadfast in the hope of our Lord Jesus Christ. LCMS Deaconess Ministry, lcms.org/deaconess.
Do you know any military veterans in your church or community? Do you have a passion to support and reach them with the gospel of Jesus Christ? Then Operation Barnabas is for you. Called by Christ's love, Operation Barnabas engages, empowers, and equips LCMS faith communities to provide hope, healing, and support to military-connected persons living in their community. Operation Barnabas is a program of LCMS Ministry to the Armed Forces. Find out more at lcms.org/armedforces.
This is LCMS missionary Pastor John Bombaro. The Coeur d'Alene area in North Idaho has a new confessional parish committed to the Lutheran liturgy, excellence in biblical teaching, and faithful pastoral care. Blessed Sacrament Lutheran Church of Hayden, Idaho, meets at 9 a.m. for our Augsburg Academy and 10 a.m. for the Divine Service of Holy Communion, at which we encounter the real voice and real presence of Jesus Christ. For our location or to join the growing family of Lutherans dedicated to the sacraments, confessions, and historic liturgy, visit blessedsacramentlutheranchurch.com.
Solid. Serious. Substantive. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by becoming an Issues Etc. congregational sponsor. Calvary Lutheran, Elgin, Illinois.
Gloria Dei Lutheran, Davie, Florida. Holy Cross Lutheran, Moline, Illinois. Living Faith Lutheran, Cumming, Georgia. Our Redeemer Lutheran, Cedar Falls, Iowa. Redeemer Lutheran, Fort Worth, Texas. St. John Lutheran, Algoma, Wisconsin. St. Paul Lutheran, Bridger, Montana. Trinity Lutheran, Austin, Texas. And Zion Lutheran, Douglas, Wyoming. Find out how your confessional Lutheran church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Just go to issuesetc.org, click Support, Donate, and print the one-page flyer. When your congregation becomes an Issues Etc. sponsor, we'll publicize your church on the radio, at our website, and in the Issues Etc. journal. We're talking to Daniel Weiss, co-author of the new book, Treading Boldly Through a Pornographic World. I'm Todd Wilkin. You're connected to Issues Etc. The Lutheran Witness magazine interprets the world from a Lutheran perspective. Each issue contains Dr. Gene Edward Veith's Worldviews column. Find out more at lcms.org/witness or call Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040. Available in print and online, the Lutheran Witness magazine. Daniel, how do you account for the disconnect between children's actual online activity and what their parents think they're doing online?
Well, you know, a lot of it has to do with the shame and the discomfort that comes with this topic. You know, we just don't talk about these things. I'm a parent of five, all still in school, and my parents didn't talk to me about this stuff. So the parents of today didn't get a healthy grounding in it and how to do it and how to do it well and how to do it in a godly way. So parents are hoping that this doesn't affect their kids, and they don't really know what to do about it. But again, I think it's, some of it's that wishful thinking that I just think we have to set that aside when we look at the culture our kids are growing up in, and when we look at the research that shows how vast this exposure is. I mean, the Barna report that I referenced earlier, 37% of teens had sought out pornography, but 49% had encountered it unwittingly. So they're getting exposed one way or another. I think parents just need to realize the times we're living in and take really proactive steps to start those conversations.
You contrast Christian purity culture, or kind of the purity solution, with chastity. First of all, what's missing from the purity approach?
Well, purity, it's a word that in its essence, it's a binary understanding of life. You either are or you're not. And we know biblically we're not. We're not pure. We're not sinless. We're not faultless. And so the problem with promoting purity as, I mean, of course we want to, you know, invite our kids and encourage them to reserve sex for marriage and to keep it within the marriage bed. I mean, we want the best options for our kids, and we want to promote optimal sexual health. But the problem with the purity narrative is it's just too narrow for life in a fallen world. I think that's why my co-author and I kind of try to resurrect that word chastity, because chastity is something a person can pursue throughout their lives. It's a disposition of the heart. It's a cultivation of a habit and a movement towards Christ, really. And that can happen after a fall or a misstep. And so we think it's a larger vision that doesn't go away if you get married, like the purity culture, save sex till married. Well, now that I'm married, do I treat sex differently? Well, in a godly understanding of things, we should still bring the values of respect and cherishing our spouse and self-sacrifice rather than selfishness. So we believe the purity narrative is just maybe too narrow. It's not wrong, but it can be misused. We have plenty of examples of people being harmed by that message of safe sex, and if not, you're dirty, you're gross, and they take that not as an indication of I've fallen short, but I'm a bad person, and therefore it's not worth trying anymore.
You also contrast perfection with process. What do you mean by that?
Yeah, I think a lot of parents, when they think about sexuality and they think about their kids growing up and becoming, you know, aware and starting to reach adolescence and have sexual thoughts and feelings, that the message is, hey, don't do it. Save this for marriage. Don't sin. And what happens is the rules and the perfection becomes sort of an idol. And then as kids, I mean, I've never met anyone who made it out of adolescence without some kind of sexual sin in their life. I mean, there's thoughts, there's actions, there's experiences and exposure. So what happens then? Well, if you start this as perfection-based, everyone's going to fall short. And then where do you go from there? The idea of seeing this as a process is our job as parents is to really help our children develop into the men and women God has created and called them to be. And so that is a process. That's the process of sanctification or the process of discipleship, however you want to say it. But it is a walking forward. And I think if parents can eliminate the idea of perfection, but continue to push the good, the true, and the beautiful, and help their kids know that nobody lives this out perfectly, but we can walk with God, we can walk with others, we can ask for and receive forgiveness after a misstep, and we can continue to move forward. It doesn't ruin the journey because perfection is no longer there. We're still on that journey with God, and we're still able to walk forward with those that love us.
Does that go along with your contrast between rules and relationship?
It is. I think many parents, honestly, it's okay to say that parents are fearful of this, of these topics, of these issues. They're fearful of talking with their kids. I think it's okay to acknowledge and admit that fear, but don't be crippled by it. And so one of the ways I think can take some of that pressure off is we can set good boundaries, healthy boundaries, and encourage our kids to grow in maturity and virtue, but not at the expense of our relationship and not at the expense of their personhood, their humanity. And so I think a lot of parents think if their kids mess up, it's only a reflection on their parenting. And it may be that, you know, all of us make mistakes parenting and we could have done better, but our kids are they're moral agents. They're making choices. And so if we see ourselves as guides rather than guards, I think the relationship, the stability of the relationship is what's going to give them the better long-term success than rules alone. Because eventually, if all you're doing is enforcing rules, at some point your children are going to leave the home where those rules no longer exist. And the question becomes, did they follow it because they had to obey or because they understood and wanted what's best for themselves? It's in relationship they're going to learn those things. It's in relationship where they're going to develop trust and the communication that allows them to talk about hard things or get help when they need it. And that's really where the long-term success is coming from. It's not simply doing the right thing. It's becoming the kind of person that God calls us to. And I think that's the relational part of it that's so powerful. When kids know that their parents are allies, you know, and not, like I said, prison guards, just demanding perfection and other expectations.
Why do you go back to the Genesis creation account, for lack of a better word, reorienting our perspective on human sexuality?
Well, it's interesting. I mean, I find Genesis 1 and 2 some of the most beautiful parts of the Bible, I mean, poetically speaking. But Jesus did this. Jesus was asked questions about sexual morality in his time. And he was asked about divorce. And he pointed people back to Genesis. You know, haven't you read? This is how God made us, male and female. Called people into this one flesh union of marriage. And they keep badgering Jesus in a sense and saying, yeah, but Moses said we could get divorced. And Jesus has this key line. He says, Moses let you get divorced because of the hardness of your hearts. In the beginning, it wasn't like this. It was not so. And so Jesus points us back to God's design. And God's design is very intentional. In the beginning, you know, if we look at the Genesis and the creation account there, God is very intentional in creating and dividing, creating and separating, creating light and separating it from the darkness, creating the earth, separating the waters from the soil and the air, and creating the animals and dividing them. And then he creates humans, and he creates a man, Adam, and in the other account, we see how he divides this person into male and female. And so there's something very significant about God's intentional design of male and female, that these are both good, godly parts of creation. And that one flesh union, as we look throughout the Bible, the marriage imagery, the marital imagery of is helping to explain God's love for his people, all the way up into Revelation, where we celebrate in heaven with the wedding feast of the bride and the lamb. And so this idea is of this one flesh marital union, the value of male and female, it's kind of a symbol or a sign of God's love for us. It's a witness and a testimony to God's love for people in a way that, you know, most people are able to experience in marriage. Of course, the world, like everything else, has broken that down, has distorted it and twisted it and caused all kinds of heartache. But to recover that original design and understand that is still God's good plan, and it's important for spiritual witness, this is a positive aspect, a beautiful aspect of a godly understanding of sexuality.
How would you respond to someone who says, look, I would approach it from a libertarian mindset, pornography is free speech, and if it's a crime, it's a victimless crime?
Well, that would be someone who has not looked at any of the evidence about the harms of pornography. It's victimless in no sense of the word. The men and women that are in pornography, who have so-called chosen to do this, very often are addicted to drugs, have very little other options. A very high percentage of the women especially have been sexually abused as children, often multiple times by many different perpetrators. They've come from broken homes. They have substance abuse issues and emotional and mental disorders, many, you know, including post-traumatic stress syndrome that comes from the, you know, directly result from the work they're doing. That's just the harms directly to the performers. I mean, there's a lot more harms that we wouldn't want to go into on a radio program because it's too graphic. But the other thing is, pornography is not the 50s pinup. It's not the 80s pizza guy delivery, you know, comes to the door with a delivery and then sex happens. It doesn't have plot lines anymore. And it's incredibly violent and debasing. One study, and this is back in 2006, looked at 50 of the most popular films released that year. So the 50 most popular porn films released, and they found violence, sexual violence, in 88% of them, where women were being, this wasn't sexual, it was violent. It was hitting, slapping, choking, beating. And this is what was mainstream pornography back then. So not only are people getting abused in the making of this content, the people seeing it and basically deriving pleasure from it are being sensitized into a way of thinking that's very sexually violent, that's very misogynistic, that's very racist-oriented. It's incredibly demeaning and degrading. And that doesn't just affect the person who's watching it, because those attitudes bleed out into the rest of their relationships. And the research shows that. So we are long past the time where I think a libertarian argument can hold sway here. It just doesn't stack up with what we know.
Daniel Weiss is a lifelong Lutheran. He's executive director of the Sexual Integrity Leadership Summit and co-author of the new book, Treading Boldly Through a Pornographic World, a Field Guide for Parents. When you purchase this book using the link at our website, a percentage of your purchase will support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. Just go to issuesetc.org, click Talk On Demand Archives, and look for Treading Boldly Through a Pornographic World. Daniel, thanks.
It's been my pleasure. Thank you.
We will be talking about the history of progressivism in the United States with Dr. Ronald Pastrito of Hillsdale College right after this.
We know that you want to build your family on the right foundation from the very start, the foundation of Jesus Christ. Concordia Publishing House offers more than 8,000 products for churches, schools, and homes, dedicated customer service, and an experienced staff to help you focus on what matters most. Click to connect at cph.org. Concordia Publishing House, listening, responding, providing for God's people. Concordia Publishing House, cph.org.
Not everyone is comfortable with new technology. Dial A Podcast gives all generations of your congregation an easy way to hear your sermons, or even devotionals and Bible studies. Once you've completed a simple one-time setup, we take care of the rest. All your congregants have to do is dial the number from any phone to listen to your latest podcast, all at no additional cost to them. Dial A Podcast. Extend the reach of your sermons. Get started at dialapodcast.com now.
Contending for truth in an age of anti-truth. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Is your school or homeschool ready to take the next step in teaching students with learning challenges? We can help. The Simply Classical curriculum, voted number one for special learners, is available from Memoria Press for students with autism, learning disabilities, or Down syndrome. We provide everything you need for a full year. Use promo code LPR21 at simplyclassical.com. Simplyclassical.com.
Logia Journal, the Confessional Dogmatic Series. The works of Kurt Marquardt and many other resources are all brought to you by Luther Academy. Did you know that during this time of COVID-19, your purchases and donations help Luther Academy supply these same resources to pastors around the world? Please consider helping us with this important need through your prayers and financial support. Learn how you can help by visiting lutheracademy.com, lutheracademy.com.